Ekadasurucheputram.
Ekadasurucheputram.
Ankam arupalalayam.
Ankam arupalalayam.
Uttamam nururukashantam.
Uttamam nururukashantam.
Dhruvam raja bayanam datha.
Dhruvam raja bayanam datha.
Ekada.
Ekada.
Once upon a time.
Suruche,
Queen Suruchi,
Putram,
the son,
Ankam,
on the lap,
Aropya,
placing,
Lalayan,
while patting,
Uttamam,
Na,
did not.
Anurukshantam,
trying to get on.
Dhruva.
Raja,
the king.
Abhyanandata,
welcome. Translation. Once upon a time, King Uttapada was patting the son of Suruchi, Uttama. Placing him on his lap, Dhruva Maharaj was also trying to get on the king's lap, but the king did not very much welcome him. Translation responsively. Once upon a time,
King Uttapada
was patting the son of Suruchi,
Uttama,
placing him on his lap.
Dhruva Maharaj
was also trying to get on the king's lap,
but the king did not very much welcome him.
Now, there's no purport to this. I'll read text 10. The translation is, while the child Dhruva Maharaj was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi, his stepmother, became very envious of the child. And with great pride she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The king, of course, was equally affectionate to both of his sons, Uttama and Dhruva. So he had a natural inclination to take Dhruva, as well as Uttama, on his lap. But because of his favoritism towards his queen Suruchi, he could not welcome Dhruva Maharaj, despite his feelings. King Uttapada's feelings was understood by Suruchi, and therefore, with great pride, she began to speak about the king's affection for her. This is the nature of a woman. If a woman understands that her husband regards her as a favourite and is especially affectionate to her, she takes undue advantage. These symptoms are visible even in such an elevated society as the family of Swayambhuva Manu. Therefore, it is concluded that the feminine nature of a woman is present everywhere. Amagana timiranda shyaganamjana salakaya chakshuram militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Vanchakalpa-tarubhyascha kripa-sindhu-vayeva-cha Patitanam-pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo-namo-namaha Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here we have an interesting section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's one of those sections where, for the politically correct, it may not be so pleasant to hear sometimes, where Prabhupada is saying here that therefore it is concluded that a feminine nature of a woman is presented here, she takes advantage of an undue affection of her husband. But actually that's equally applying to men as well, actually, if you look at it in that way. When I went over this verse and the whole story of Dhruva, I thought I'd break it down into four specific areas that I wanted to focus on. The first area that I wanted to focus on was the fact that Dhruva Maharaj was just such a small child. And so thereby I wanted to talk a little bit about childhood influences and how things that happen in our life in early childhood affect us later. The second thing I wanted to talk about was the role of austerities, to perform austerities. The third point, which is also relevant in this purport, is taking undue advantage of another, and justice and equality in a leadership role. So the king was a leader, and yet he was acting unjust in regards to Dhruva. The fourth one is that the only worthwhile austerity is the austerity of serving the Lord. It's the only worthwhile real austerity. So we'll go through those points point by point. So the first one is childhood influences. So many of us find it really difficult to remember our early part of our life. Those years from birth to about five are pretty dim in our memory. Some of us can remember, some of us can't remember. But how we are treated in those early parts of our lives actually determine how we will act as an adult in areas such as our relationships with people, in areas such as our standing in society, our personal conduct, how much confidence we have in ourselves, so on and so forth. This is really, really a crucial point. So this is actually supported by many researches that have been done, psychological researches that have been done throughout this century and last century. They did studies on children as they grew, and they determined how they would grow up depending on what the family situation was like. It's very, very interesting when you see the evidence that if a child is coming, number one, from a family where there's not affection, where there's no emotion shown, where there's no priority given to the child, then the ramifications of that is that they have a difficult adulthood, they find it difficult to be educated, there is a decline in their educational standard, so many different things. And this is also evident in people that are coming from a divorced family. As much as we like to say in this society, well, if two couples can't get on together, then we just divorce. And that's okay for the children. They spend a part of their time in this family and a part of their time in that family. And mum and dad still love them. But there is a real need to have that solidity of family life for the raising of a child. And there are conclusive evidence and different researches that have been done by universities all over the world which specify that if you want to have a stable, balanced adult, treat them with the greatest sensitivity and the greatest amount of positivity and emotion and love and affection when they were a young child. This is evident. They also did studies. This is really interesting. They did studies of mass murderers, criminals. The FBI did these series of investigations back in the 70s. That's when they started actually to research. Why do these mass murderers, like we've just recently had this horrible tragedy in America, where again 17 young students were killed for no reason whatsoever, except that this guy, this person, was so upset about being expelled from school and so on and so forth. But what the research has done, what they found, was that actually if there was a deficiency in the person's life from a very early age, it brings about an instability. And all these mass murderers, they took a notation, they studied each one, they had interviews with them, and each one came from either a broken home, a violent situation, an uncaring situation, each and every one of them. So that brings us to the understanding that if we want to raise prosperous, happy, mature, lovely children, we have to do our utmost to actually look after them in those very early years. What to speak right through. They need the support and the love of the parents very much, right from the word go. Prabhupada actually said that our greatest service, if you are a grihastha and you have children, your greatest service, above and beyond any other service, above and beyond any other service, this includes Sankirtan, book distribution, deity worship, everything, is to look after your children. They are your future and their future. will be assured. Their Krishna consciousness will be assured. So in the early years of Krishna consciousness, we weren't so familiar with this understanding. And we thought, you know, we just do what's necessary, go out and preach and distribute books and do Sankirtan. And in a sense, Krishna will look after our children. And so we would either leave them in gurukuls or leave them with other people. And it wasn't the right thing to do. And consequently, we see in subsequent years that there has been difficulties with that generation of children. I can honestly attest even our own children. I love them dearly. But if I had my time over again, I would place more emphasis on actually being there with them and following them through. I remember one time, and Bhakti remembers this, the most saddening thing in my heart that I have of my remembrance as a child of my children. We left our daughter at a very early age because we had to go to India. We had to go to India. We felt it was imperative. Beyond, we had to fix up our spiritual life and go to the Holy Dharam. And it would mean that we had to leave this... How old was she, Bhakti?
1.5 years old.
2 years, nearly 2 years old. We had to leave the small child behind with somebody else. That she had never seen before. So the vision I have, and this is a thing that haunts me for the whole of my life and will haunt me for the rest of my life, was as we were driving out of the farming community, because I was the manager of the farm at that stage, as I was driving out of the... I looked in my rear vision mirror and there was my little two-year-old child screaming, "Mummy and Daddy, where are you going?" I'll never forget that image. So I highly recommend to all the grihasthas and parents, look after your children to the best that you can. So this is a very important thing. Krishna consciousness is a wonderful thing, but we have to do things in a very systematic and proper way. You know, like there's an analogy that's given that, you know, you have a musical instrument like a guitar, and if the strings on the guitar are slack, you can't play a tune, isn't it? You can't play any music. And if you tighten them and they're just right, the tightening is just right, then you can play a beautiful tune. But if you tighten them too much, what happens? The strings snap. So it is the same with our children. There has to be some stricture, there has to be some tightening, but it can't be over. There's no extreme. So we should be very modest and gentle with our children. Don't be too extreme. And how do we engage them in Krishna consciousness? We arrange activities for them. We arrange activities for them by reading Krishna books with them, by letting them watch certain videos with little Krishna. Has everybody seen little Krishna? Even I love watching little Krishna. I can watch it over and over again, you know, it's just so sweet. So you let the children watch that. And the most important thing that we do with our children is engage them in service. Just as you're engaged in service, you get your child also to be engaged in service. Something in relationship to Krishna. Don't keep the children away from the service to Krishna. Don't say, "Oh, I have service to do, you go and do something else." Bring your child into the service. If it's making garlands, say for example, your child can help you in making the garlands. He or she can put the flowers together. If they're suchi, you make sure, "Now listen, sweetheart, you have to be clean." "So are you clean?" "Yes, I'm clean." "Have you got a clean dress on?" "Yes." "Now you can help mummy making the garlands, or you can make daddy helping the evening meal and make prasadam." It is important to engage them. And then also get them to do the offerings, to help with the offering, set up the Lord's plate. These sort of things are very, very important. If we are to encourage kids in our Krishna consciousness, we have to make it fun for them, that it is an attractive thing for them to do. So this is the case. So these are some things that we should remember, and if I had my time over again, I would do it. But this is just Krishna's arrangement. It happened as it happened. Dhruva, as we see in this story of Dhruva, these pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj, how he was affected by this injustice that was put upon him. He wanted very much to sit on the lap of Daddy. I mean, this guy is the king. He's got this fabulous throne and everything. There's his brother hopping on his knee. And, I mean, he could see that his daddy was really affectionate towards him. And he thinks, hey, I'm going on Papa's knee, you know. And then he got pushed off. Now, that hurt him so much that he became so angry. Because of Sariti said, you know, you better you be born from my body than you would have had that opportunity. And so he became so angry. And that anger burnt in him to the extent that he wanted to attain a kingdom much greater than his father. In other words, he wanted to defeat his father. That's the anger that he had. It makes out in the Srimad Bhagavatam that he just wanted to create another kingdom. But actually what he's saying is he wanted to usurp his father. He wanted to destroy his father by having a greater kingdom. So this was the anger that was welling up in Dhruva Maharaj. So we have to be really careful. Children are such delicate individuals. That's why there's such a big thing at the moment. Over the last century, as we all know, there's been this emphasis on child abuse, and primarily through religious institutions, because parents trust the leaders within religious institutions. And unfortunately, that trust was misused. And young children were abused, and consequently their lives were ruined. So this is of good notation. And now within our movement, we are strictly following the guidelines that the Royal Commission has put into place about protecting our children. Protecting our children to the utmost degree. Which means that all of us here in this temple are involved. As it's been pointed out several times, if you have any dealing with a child, whether you're brahmachari, brahmacharini, grihastha, if you are a leader in a bhakti vriksha group, anyone has to have a working with children's check. You have to have it. You must. And so now we have a child protection officer in each temple who will be coordinating that all the children are looked after. Not even necessarily that they're sexually abused, but they're not abused in any way or neglected in any way. That is the role of the CPO officer. So this is of the utmost importance now within our society as a whole and within ISKCON. So everyone has to take that responsibility and look for the children's safety. This was a message that came through to me through this purport, this one of the childhood influences, because they are so malleable. And whatever we put into their little brains at that early point, Prabhupada said, if you give me your child in Krishna consciousness, if you give them Krishna consciousness at a very early age and it's coupled with love and affection, they will have that knowledge for the whole of their life and they'll become very good devotees. Now, with that change of consciousness, we can see the result, as was mentioned yesterday in class, that, you know, children here are just wonderful examples of Krishna conscious children. The most of them are. So this is very important. The next point that I wanted to bring up was the role of austerities. The role of austerities, to do austerities. So I just want to read something that Prabhupada said about austerities. And the Srila Prabhupada says, the incidents in the life of Dhruva Maharaj are very attractive for the devotees. From his pious actions, one can learn how one can detach himself from material possessions and how one can enhance one's devotional service by severe austerities and penances. By hearing the activities of pious Dhruva, one can enhance one's faith in God and can directly connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, one can very soon be elevated to the transcendental platform of devotional service. The example of Dhruva Maharaj's austerities can immediately generate a feeling of devotional service in the hearts of the hearers. So to hear the story of Dhruva Maharaj and how determined he was after getting the advice of Narad Muni that if you perform these austerities, you will see God, you will see Krishna, the divine, the supreme controller of everything, he became very enthusiastic. That enthusiasm is also transformed into us when we read this pastime. So austerity, tapasya, means voluntary giving up things, some form of sense gratification. Each one of us have different sense gratifications, and it means actually reducing or giving up voluntarily these material sense gratifications. There's a saying, tapasya brahmacharyena, that the treasure of a brahmachari is the treasure of austerities, to be able to perform austerities. And when we categorize a brahmachari, that includes brahmacharinis, that includes grihastha brahmacharis. Because grihastha brahmacharis have even a greater task. They have the influence of each other, the partner, and they have to be very mindful to control their senses as well. So austerity is part of a devotee's life. As far as the body is concerned, there are four elements. What are they? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's part of the human, but anybody's, any living entity's element. The problem with modern society is that they're trying to increase these demands, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, whereas they should be decreasing. So this is evident within the 21st century. We are increasing in our sense gratification. So many things are there for our enjoyment. Everything is there at the tip of our fingers. You can do anything. Go online, you can see anything, you can do anything, you can have any sort of intoxicant. There are so many different intoxications, so many things. You can eat the most incredible things. Sleeping arrangements have been made. You can sleep in such wonderful ways. You can get wonderful foam mattresses now that are just absolutely luxurious. They've got this thing called magic foam or something that keeps your body shape, and it fits you exactly, so you're like snug as a bug when you go to sleep at night time. You can sleep so wonderfully, you can sleep for hours. And you can mating, wow, there's never been a better time for mating. You know, we can have sex control, pills, abortion, who cares, even if by accident we do have a pregnancy. Just go to a clinic and get that fetus removed and you can continue on. We can have sexual relationships with so many people. It's now quite common to have more than one partner and it's all okay. We can just have promiscuous society. So this is the increase in our society. And defending. We have to defend ourselves, you know. So we've got the greatest, latest weapons for defending ourselves. And yes, they're really good. We have these atomic weaponry that can be used against an enemy. We don't know who the enemy is, but if this weapon falls into hands of someone else, they can use it to shoot up small children. And the latest thing that our leaders in America are saying, that they should arm the teachers as well. So when we arm the teachers with really good guns and they know how to kill, and when the students know how to kill, then in our schools we start shooting the students and the teachers. This is ludicrous. So this is our advancement in our society. This is the growth of our society. So the demands of eating and sleeping, mating and defending are escalating where they should be decreasing. An individual in history understands that somehow or another we have to perform austerities. We have to perform austerities. To attain anything in this material world, we have to perform some austerity. You know, I mean, if you're an artist, say, for example, there are certain things that you have to go through. There's certain techniques and learning that you have to learn if you're a student, a scientist. They're all different austerities. You have to go to university and so many different lectures you have to attend. Yeah, he agrees. And so many different things you have to do. If you want to be an athlete, you have to perform so many austerities. I was just reading about the athletes that have gone over to South Korea for the Winter Olympics. The austerities that these people go through. There was one which is really interesting. I don't know if you've seen this. There is a technique that, or one of the competitions is that they slide off this big slope of snow, and then they have this loop thing, and they go wee, and then they somersault, and then they land again. Right now, to perfect that, if you're living in an area where there's snow, you slide down this ramp with your skis and you flip and you land in the water, in a pool. And they do this time and time and time and time again just to perform this austerity. They have to get up early in the morning. Even swimmers and athletes and football players, they do this incredible austerity. So austerities are there. And even we in devotional service, Prabhupada said that we should do different austerities. Even in our work, we have to perform some austerity. We have to perform some work. When Dhruva met the great sage Narad Muni, Narad instructed him in the mystic yoga and devotion. Then under Narad Muni's direction, Dhruva went to the forest and practiced austerities. Now this is some of the things that Dhruva Maharaj did. During the first month, Dhruva ate only fruit every third day. Now I'm trying to go on a little bit of a diet, but this is ridiculous. Every third day to have a little bit of fruit. This was the determination and the power of Dhruva Maharaj. During the second month, he ate fruit every 6 days. Right? Then he ate grass and leaves. Then he fasted just on water. He just lived on water. Then under Narad's direction, throughout time, he practiced the breathing control. So he helped to control his breathing. And he became so accomplished that he could hold his breath for a long period of time, for days actually, he could withhold his breath. Eventually he attained different yogic perfections. There are yogic perfections. Anybody read Patanjali's Yoga Sutras? In Patanjali Yoga Sutras, there are these different sutras or siddhis that manifest for a person that is enlightened, in that they can walk on water, they can manifest anything by just a thought, they can procure anything from any part of the world, they can transfix themselves to another place, they can fly, they can do so many different things, and these are the siddhis. So Dhruva Maharaj was completely attuned with all these mystic and yogic perfections. And one of them is that you can increase your weight to the extent where he created the weight that was putting pressure on the entire universe. This is how devoted. And completely controlling his mind and senses. So in this way, eventually he happened to see, he got the opportunity to see Lord Vishnu. Krishna manifested himself within his meditation. So he was chanting the mantra. What was the mantra? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then when he's meditating, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, with this incredible power, all of a sudden within his mind, Lord Vishnu appeared. And he went, and he opened his eyes, and there in front of him was Lord Vishnu. This is the power of a devotee. So Krishna, face to face. This is our desire as well. We as devotees want to see Krishna face to face. This was attained by Dhruva Maharaj in a 6 month period of time. How long have we been devotees? A long time. And it hasn't happened. But in 6 months, due to his power of austerities, within 6 months, Dhruva Maharaj had the darshan, first in meditation, and then physically Lord Vishnu came to visit him. So Prabhupada relates Dhruva Maharaj's extraordinary austerities to our own situation in ISKCON, in Krishna consciousness, and I'd like to read that out. Prabhupada says, "We should always remember that becoming a bona fide devotee of the Lord is not an easy task. It is not an easy task. But in this age, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, it has been made very easy. If we do not follow even the liberal instructions of Lord Chaitanya, how can we expect to discharge our regular duties in devotional service? It is not possible in this age to follow Dhruva Maharaj in his austerities. But the principles must be followed. We should not disregard the regulative principles given by our spiritual master, for they make it easier for the conditioned soul." So the regulative principles are there. The guru gives the principles that one should abide by. The principles of human life, really. What we have out there in the broader world is animal life, humans in animal form, really. The four principles of human life are no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating. What's happened? Is it broken down again? Okay, is it all right? Okay. So this is really interesting, you know. We have to practice these austerities. And Prabhupada then goes on to follow by discharging these regulative principles given by our spiritual master. So our spiritual master makes the arrangement. You follow these and the goal will be there for you. As far as our ISKCON movement is concerned, we simply ask that one observe these four prohibitions and chant 16 rounds, and instead of indulging in luxurious eating of the tongue, simply eat Krishna prasadam, offered to the Lord. This was in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.8.72. So this is later in the chapters. We come to Prabhupada's purport on this. So austerity is a really important thing in our devotional careers. Now there is one austerity which is the king of austerities, the highest austerity. Can anybody tell me what the greatest austerity a devotee can have? Anyone?
Changing of religion.
That's one. It's not the major one. Anybody else? That's very important to chant regularly. But there is another important austerity that we have to perform. Small time. That's not all that hard, is it? Really? If you go to bed early, it's quite easy to get up from under lady. Yes, Prabhu?
Preaching
is good, yeah. There's one other thing. I'll tell you what it is. The greatest example of austerity is forgiveness. To practice forgiveness. Think about it. To practice forgiveness. Forgiveness is a quality that is absolutely crucial in order for there to be any peace of mind, any peace and harmony in this world. The ability to be able to forgive. If we cannot forgive, then there's no possibility of any relationship surviving on any level, whether that's God brother to God brother, God sister to God sister, temple authorities with individual, family and different families, nation, so on and so forth. There has to be the quality of forgiveness. And it's not easy sometimes to forgive. You know, in this material world we have the element of gravity, right? There's gravity in the material world. You know, gravity, Newton says, you know, you throw something up, it has to come down. So there's a constant pressure for things to come down. And so you have, you know, like engineers that want to build a big building. They have to work diligently against gravity to keep a building standing. You know that? They had to really work how to work it, because everything in nature actually wants to come down. So similarly, there's similar instances where in our relationships and especially in our consciousness, there are things that will drag us down. The material world is geared in such a way to actually bring us down, to make us fall down, to make us feel low, like that. And without the austerity of forgiveness, anything sacred within life will collapse, will fall down. So it's so important to be able, if someone has done you a wrong, just like we had here with Dhruva Maharaj, if someone has done you wrong, to be able to forgive, right? If you are brought up in a family and you had a rotten childhood, you have to learn to forgive, to overcome. So forgiveness is really... You also have to have the ability to forgive yourself, to be, you know, introspective and be able to forgive yourself, that you're a fallen conditioned soul and that you will pick up and carry on. So forgiveness is of the utmost need. And so there is an example which I'll give. If someone hurts us and we get angry and we feel our rights have been violated, it's like, and we feel that anger welling up in us, it's like someone has got a hot coal, right, and placed it in our hand. When they've done something wrong to us, it's like a hot coal placed in our hand. and it's hot and it's burning and we hold on to it. And the reason why we want to hold on to it, because we want to throw that hot coal back at the person that did this horrible thing to us. So while this is burning us, we're carrying this pain and suffering. It's like a poison, and keeping poison toxins within our mind. So we have to rid ourselves, and forgiveness is the art of liberating ourselves from this toxin, from this burning desire, to be able to let that go. And when we have this ability to forgive, then our spirituality is revived, and our health is revived, our emotions are revived, everything is revived. But it is a major austerity. It is not easy to do. There are examples throughout history of all the different faith traditions of how exemplary personalities had control of this austerity, had the power of this austerity to be able to forgive. The classic one for Western society is, of course, Lord Jesus Christ. Now, he was put through so much suffering. So much suffering. And he's an innocent man. He did nothing except preach God consciousness. And he was confronted with a death which none of us would like to have. He was persecuted. He was tortured. His skin was ripped. He was done in so many different ways. There was offences to him. And then the ultimate was that he was strung up on a cross, left to bleed, nails driven through his hands, and in great pain. Has anybody ever pierced themselves with a pin when you're doing deity worship or something and you pin yourself with a pin? Ah! Can you imagine a rusty nail being hit through? Now, the thing is that these Romans at that stage had the art of suffering down. They knew the exact nerve point on your wrists and on your ankles to make you feel pain the most. So that's why they did this, that he could feel the pain the most. And so here he was, Lord Jesus Christ, strung up on the cross. They speared him and everything. And what did he do? He practiced the austerity of forgiveness. Most people would say, "Why are they doing this to me, you rascals?" He turned around to them and said, "My Lord, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." This is the quality of a sadhu. This is the quality of a real Vaishnava. This is the quality of true austerity, to have that kind of forgiveness. In our own history, in the Vedic histories, there's many incidences of forgiveness. The greatest, of course, is Haridas Thakur, who again was humiliated and suffered in so many different marketplaces, only to forgive whoever did this atrocity to him. So austerity of forgiveness is a great, great important thing, and we should practice that. So if somebody has done you wrong, they've talked to you in the wrong way, or have upset you, or whatever, better that you forgive. Let it go. And never think about it again. As long as you keep thinking, this is a poison within my system, this is a burning coal in my hand, I'll never forget that person, I'll never forgive them. Turn around and forgive them and throw the rock away. Empty the poison out and your spiritual life will rejuvenate. Don't stagnate your spiritual life by holding on to petty grievances. If someone has done you wrong, even if you think, even if they don't even repent, or even if they don't see that they've done you wrong, it doesn't matter. You forgive them anyway. It's no longer part of you. Sometimes you hear, you know, like when there's been a victim of a murder or something like that. Rarely do you hear the person say, "I've forgiven that person because I don't want to carry that person with me for the rest of my life who killed my loved one." So this is really important. So that's the greatest austerity. The third point I wanted to mention here is taking undue advantage of another. Justice and equality in a leadership role. Justice and equality in a leadership role. So we see in this verse how Suruchi is taking advantage. She's taking advantage. Srila Prabhupada states in this purport, we've mentioned here, where if a woman understands her husband's regards her as a favourite and is especially affectionate to her, She takes undue advantage. These symptoms are visible even in such elevated societies. So a woman may take advantage. And maybe, you know, a man can take advantage as well. But the thing is that as a leader, we should be equal to everyone and open to everyone in regards to people being coerced by a female or whatever, someone taking advantage of a person's attractive form or whatever. We have the current political situation where the Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, a devout Christian, so to speak, person of faith, he presumes himself, has an adulterous affair with some personal secretary. I don't know if you're all aware of that. He had to step down as the Deputy Prime Minister because of his affair. He kept it hidden from his wife and children until she became pregnant, the lady became pregnant. And on the front page of the newspapers, there's this picture of our Deputy Prime Minister glaring at the naked legs, you know, of his secretary. He's looking at her legs, just completely materially conscious. These are our leaders. So Prabhupada mentions many times that man is like butter and the woman is like fire. So we have to be careful in our relationships, and we have to be understanding that we work with each other for a Krishna conscious purpose. So if we have a power or we're in a position of leadership, it is of the utmost importance that we are fair and equal to all, for the simple reason that we are all equal. Krishna loves each and every one of us equally. And just because we have the role of a king or some position in a company or a position in a temple doesn't mean that you are better than someone else. We are not better than anybody else. We are all equal. God loves each and every one of us equally, even to the ant. As I've mentioned before, sometimes some people still have the idea that it's okay to squat a mosquito or a little fly is annoying them and they just go and grab it. It's not. Krishna loves that individual within that little flea body or fly body just as much as he loves you. So we have to be very mindful. And if we're in a leadership role, we have to be fair and equal to everyone. And the simple analogy is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The story is given of someone who may be doing deity worship, the highest service, being a devout Brahman, you know, serving the Lord very nicely, serving the deity very nicely, and treating his underlings or people that are under him with disregard and disrespect, thinking himself, oh, I'm such a pious Brahman, you are nothing. This is wrong. In the scriptures, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that someone who is seeing the Lord on the altar should similarly see the Lord in the heart, that deity of the Lord in the heart of every living entity that he comes in contact with. And worship, the same way he worships a deity on the altar, he should worship that deity within the heart of every living entity. So thereby there's equality. And the bigger the leader you are, the more you should express that equality. The more you should express that humbleness and understand that you are the same as that person. You know, so this is of the utmost importance. Leaders should be the best example. So whether you're a Bhakti Vriksha group leader, the leader in your household, the temple president, the GBC, the guru, a business colleague, we have to be the best and be fair and equal to everyone. So this is of the utmost importance. The reason why I'm mentioning this also is that because of another thing that is coming up here at the temple, and the notice just went up on the board today, it is imperative that all the Bhakti Vriksha group leaders are to attend a sexual harassment seminar given by Krishna Rupa Prabhu from the Women's Protection, Women's Portfolio. So this is incumbent upon all of us actually to come and listen to this, so we don't misuse our leadership roles. This is very important. And these are some of the ways that ISKCON is moving into the 21st century, because this is now demanded of all religious traditions, all religious institutions, that we become mindful of these different things. So that sexual harassment seminar is going to be put on the 17th and 18th of March here in the temple. And everyone that is a leader, any Bhakti Vriksha group leader, and anyone else can attend that lecture. But it is compulsory, it is mandated by the temple authorities, by the executive, that each person has to attend this sexual harassment seminar. And it's 2 days. If you can't make it the one day, make it the next day. So this is really important. The fourth thing that I wanted to bring up was the only worthwhile austerity is austerity in the service to the Lord. So we see here how Dhruva Maharaj is performing these austerities and ultimately to see Krishna. And when he saw Krishna, all his desires for attaining a huge kingdom and everything just fell by the wayside, faded away. Prabhupada says that too. So there's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 2, yat karosi yat anasi yat yujasi tadasi yat yat tapasyasi kuntaya tat kurushvala and mad aparam. You know? Every austerity that you perform, whether it's eating, everything you offer and give away, and all austerities that you perform should be done in the service of the Lord. Krishna says that. So our austerity should always be the focus, like Dhruva Maharaj, of attaining Krishna. And if we're serious about going back to Godhead, we have to perform these austerities. We must apply the principles of austerity. There's no other way. And if you miss this chance, Prabhupada was so emphatic, don't miss this chance in this lifetime. Finish it up in this lifetime. There's no real positive thing that you'll come back in such a wonderful time, you know, that we have at the present stage of the gift that Lord Chaitanya has given us. You know, we think, well, perhaps we'll come back and we'll continue on our devotional service. There's no guarantee that you're going to end up back in Lord Chaitanya's time. Because in the spiritual world, there's no time. So there's no, you know, you could be, your soul could be transported to another dimension or another universe where this isn't in place. You know, this simple process of hearing and chanting, following the principles, and then you can get back home. So Prabhupada is saying, don't waste a moment of time in this world. Become very Krishna conscious here and now. Dhruva Maharaj can do it in 6 months. Maybe we can do it in 60 years. Maybe. But let's try in less time. So as a devotee, there is a certain amount of business that we have to do. If we're here, we have to perform our duties and to accomplish in human form of life. And heading the list of the business is to be detached from material desires. So we somehow or other just have to kick out material desires and just work on that austerity of becoming very fixed. Don't become too detached from this life. Prabhupada writes, we should be determined to finish our duties in executing devotional service in this life. We should not wait for another life to finish our job. And devotional renunciation is easy and pleasant. Who finds it so taxing, devotional service, really? Is it really that hard to wake up in the morning and hear the beautiful sound of chanting the holy names and okay, to eat delicious Krishna prasadam, you know, to have a wonderful relationship you know, so many different things, a wonderful thing, it's very pleasant. So Rupa Goswami taught the principle of Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya is using all material things in the service to the Lord. Everything can be used in the service to the Lord. And that's an austerity, to use everything in the service. We've got the camera here. We've got so many different things. The microphone. Everything is used in the service of the Lord. We each have our cars, our homes. Everything can be used in the service to the Lord. And he explains in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, that this Yukta Vairagya is superior to its opposite, which is Falgun Vairagya. Falgun means a river that flows underneath. So in India you've got like a dry riverbed, but underneath there's actually the river that's floating. So Falgun Vairagya, so Yukta Vairagya is the flow, just to go with the flow. So what appears only a dry riverbed, sometimes the skies under the earth continues to flow. This is called Falgun Vairagya. Rupa Goswami compares the renunciation that neglects the use of everything in Krishna's service as such a river. Now, a lot of the artificial renunciates perform this activity. They say this material body is hellish, and they say the spirit is the only thing that counts. So they try to completely renounce the body, and ultimately you see what happens with that? They fall to pieces after a period of time. It doesn't last. So, an example of that, a really interesting example of Prabhupada, there was this yogi, right? And there was you've probably seen it. There was this famous picture of this yogi where they presented this yogi with a whole heap of money, right? And the yogi for the picture went like this. Like he didn't want, oh no, I don't want the money. And so they showed this picture to Prabhupada of this yogi with a big pile of money and this yogi going, oh no, I'm far too, you know, too removed from this. Impersonalist. And Prabhupada said, you can take the photo of me, put the money in front of me and I'll be going, yes, I'll take it. So these are things. Sometimes meditators speak of reaching a stage of desirelessness. You know, impossible. However, because the desires are the natural function of the living entity. To have desires is normal. And to fulfill those desires in a Krishna conscious way is a wonderful thing. Everything can be utilized in Krishna consciousness. But to have this renunciation where I'm renouncing everything, no, I'm renouncing everything, I'm spirit, and then falling down again because you can't maintain is bhogatya. It's falling down again. And I have seen it working with the interfaith groups, working with other ashrams that teach impersonalism. You see how, you know, they teach this impersonalism and this desirelessness that you should be free of all desires and everything. And then the next thing you know, the guru has fallen down with all his disciples and having a hedonistic sort of lifestyle. And people are going, what the? It's just outrageous. So Yukta Vairagya solves this dilemma. By practicing Yukta Vairagya, we accept the body as material, but not as the ultimate source of corruption. We concentrate on the soul, and we also take care of the body. So it's a two-way thing, and everything in the service of the Lord. Austerity may be seen by some people as painful. When we're reading the life of Dhruva Maharaj, what he did in those 6 months, you sort of think, that's painful. But what we've been given is something that is absolutely wonderful. It is free, it liberates us, we're able to go back home, back to Godhead after a certain period of time. Prabhupada said the only austerity we have to perform is to chant 16 rounds, follow the four regulative principles, try to outreach and preach to somebody. Krishna says, that person is the most dear to me. And at the end, you'll come home to me. And this is all we have to do. Even if we think we're not completely qualified, if we have stuck with that principle of austerity, following the principles, chanting, when the guru introduces you to Krishna, and you shake hands with Krishna, and that's the end. And then you go off with him in the spiritual world. That can happen in this very life. That can happen in this very life if we simply follow these simple steps of austerity. How much simpler can it be? And Prabhupada is such a munificent person. He allowed us this simplicity. And what we lacked, he'll carry for us. And our spiritual master will help us on the way. This is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. We have got such a treasure. We have got such a treasure. And we shouldn't abuse it. We shouldn't waste it. So Srila Prabhupada explains, when one is in Krishna consciousness, he automatically loses the taste for pale things. Things in the material world, if you've been a devotee for a little while, things start to pale into insignificance, don't they? Material things start to pale into insignificance. Like you hear a rock song. Like beforehand, I can still tell you, in the 70s, I'm lousy at remembering Bhagavad Gita verses, but I can tell you every song in the 70s. I know all the lyrics. Everything is registered there and deep in my brain. But it's an irrelevance. It doesn't mean anything to me anymore. And so many things in the material world just mean, you know, people get so hepped up about their car. Oh, I bought the latest Merc. I bought the latest BMW. Look at this. It's got this knob and that knob. And it's got this trim and that trim. And it's got that engine. And it means absolutely. Does it take you from here to there? Yes, I'm happy with that. Whatever. Is it comfortable, reasonably comfortable to sit in? Yes. That's it, folks. You know, and people have these desires that they've got to travel to see all these different things. I went to Machu Picchu and I saw this and I went to the pyramids and I went here and I sat in the pool in Hawaii, you know, and I was, and they can rave on and on. So what? You got your body wet. You're lazing in the pool. I can do that in my bathtub. Wahoo! You know, so for a devotee it means nothing. What is important to a devotee is that they're serving the Lord. Oh, you know, somebody asked me the other day, so what have you been, what's turned you on lately? And I said, we just had this massive parade and there were thousands of people and they were chanting the holy name of the Lord. And then she looked at me, yeah, but that must have been a lot of work. Yeah, it was ecstatic. I was completely wrecked at the end of it, but I loved it, you know. And this is the power of devotional service. We have a completely different priority. Love for God is everything to us. And when we love God, we do anything for Him. You know, whatever austerity needs to be performed, we'll do it. We'll do it. And Krishna provides us the opportunity to go back home, back to God. And through the agency, firstly and foremostly, by His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, and through our lineage, our dear gurus, and in all the different phases, our Shiksha gurus, our Diksha gurus. They're all working together. And every one of us is equal. Every one of us is exactly the same. No one's higher or lower. We're all working to go back home, back to Godhead. So I'll stop here. Any comments or questions in any of these four different areas? Yes, Prabhu.
What does Sri Krishna say that he was taking one of the 11 people because now was borderline of psychotic, that's why you're doing this, we don't need to be giving anyone better life?
Say it again. Psychotic people. Yeah.
Because you are borderline to admit in the hospital,
right.
So you need this.
Yeah.
But we are balancing our life.
Uh-huh. Ah. We're psychotic.
Yeah.
Hmm. I'll stay with my psychotic nature.
And they think that we will get admitted in the hospital, so we need that.
Yeah, there are some people think that we're mad. But we're mad for Krishna. We're not mad for material life. Material life is a dead-end street. We want happiness. And your so-called normal way of achieving happiness is at best finite. There's no way that anyone in the material world can be happy forever. Right? But we as devotees are getting a taste of eternal happiness. Something that lasts. Something that will be ongoing. And even if we're deluding ourselves, what a better way to live, you know, to just serve Krishna, you know. In their mind, if they think that we're deluding ourselves, so what? We don't care. Look at your life, it's full of misery, you know. You know, when death eventually comes with your materialistic ideas and your normality, what will you be screaming? What will you be hanging on to? You're losing your friends, you're losing your riches, you're losing your beauty, you're losing everything. But the devotee just gets surcharged with more and more connection with Krishna. And at the time of death, yeah, my dear friend and uncle, Venu Gopal Prabhu, just passed away. In my mind, he's a hero. How he passed away. He passed away smiling, loving, the connection he had with Srila Prabhupada and with Krishna. He was completely content. He had beautiful house, he had beautiful wife, he had beautiful service, and yet he was happy to leave. Explain that to a non-devotee. Explain that to a materialist. I see it every day in chaplaincy when I perform chaplaincy at the different hospitals, you know, how people grasp on to material life. Don't take this away from me. Why is God doing this to me? So painful. And in the end, Krishna says, I'll take everything away from you. Krishna says that. I come as time. Time I am, destroyer of everything. Here you go. I'll destroy everything. Your Donald Trumps and your rich people and everything. Here, we just take everything from you. And now you become a flea again. And start again. And Krishna doesn't do it in a negative way. He does it in a loving way. Because that's what that person needs at that time. So we don't take any heed of what we used to get criticized so much in the streets. Do you still get criticized in the streets when you do book distribution? Yeah. Get yourself a job, huh?
Every day.
Every day. Tell me what they say.
What they say?
Get a job.
Get a job. Why are you looking like this? Why are you standing on this?
Yeah. Why are you disturbing me? But then you come across to someone and sees your aura and your Krishna consciousness and says, I want something that this guy has got.
And many people are approaching.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
They're more appreciative.
There's more appreciation. And that's increasing, you know that?
It's
increasing by day, you know? It's amazing. Like yesterday, I out of the blue, I was giving a class to this college. Wesley College, ladies were here. And I was out of the blue, all of a sudden, the ex-premier of Melbourne rings me up. Hey, Bhakta, how are you? Ted Bailey here. You know, I just wanted to find out how you're doing. You know, I'm having a back operation, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking, influencing top leaders that were so enthralled by Krishna here in this place. He felt the love that we had for devotees. He does so much work for the Hindu community. It's amazing, the impact. And I mean, what to speak of, what's his name, the temple president in the manor? Shruti Dharma. Have you seen what Shruti Dharma has done recently? He got an invitation from Buckingham Palace, right? And it was an invitation for 1,000 of the most prominent people within England to come to Buckingham Palace for this dinner engagement. So he was invited. Then out of that 1,000, 20 were to have special session with the Queen and the royal family. He was one of the 20. This is how far ISKCON has got. He was one of the 20. He had personal discussions with the Prime Minister, right, who treated him as a friend, the Foreign Minister, again, and then the Queen. The Queen came up, she said, oh! How are you? You know, and Shruti Dharma goes, oh, Your Majesty, nice to see you. Thank you for inviting me. He says, oh, I remember you. You're the nice gentleman from the, what's the school called?
Krishna Avanti.
Oh, you're the nice man from the Krishna Avanti school. And Shruti Dharma goes, yes, ma'am, I met you then and we gave you this present. Can you remember the present? Oh, yes, I can indeed. And she said, and he said it was a present, a tapestry of Lord Chaitanya in the forest with the animals. And she said, oh, yes, we have that hanging up in Buckingham Palace. And Prince Philip then also spoke to him. And then Prince Charles came. Oh, yes, the Hare Krishnas. Wonderful people. What did he say? You chant and dance in the street and you help people, and I'm very much appreciative of that. This is the impact that we've got in Krishna consciousness movement. There are people out there that will criticize us and think that we're nuts. But if you have a minute bit of intelligence, you see, actually, they're the most intelligent people in our society. And we should follow them. So we don't care what people think.
Perfect, too, sometimes people say,
Yeah. My parents, my brothers and sisters, my friends were all like, what, mate, you're not smoking dope anymore? What? You know, when I first met them, you're not coming down the pub to have a drink with me anymore? I said, no, I don't want to drink anymore. I've just no attraction for it at all, you know. Interesting thing, just a minor thing. Before I was a devotee, I tried everything to stop smoking. Just an attachment, right? material attachment. I couldn't stop smoking. I went to this program, that program, this program. Became a devotee within a week. You know, of being a bhakta, of being introduced to Krishna consciousness, that taste, it faded to insignificance. So my friends were saying, you're not smoking anymore, you know. I said, no, not interested. What about sex, mate? You know, you haven't any more sex? I said, no, not interested. What? You must be mad. It's the greatest thing you can have. I said, no, I'm just not interested. I've got a higher taste. Being a devotee is far more fun. And some of them actually took it up. Some of them actually became devotees. But others, we faded away and they couldn't understand. So, yeah. Any other comments or questions at all? Yeah, probably. Oh, don't tell me it's an appearance day of somebody.
When you were telling about austerity, Srila Prabhupada was traveling on the train, and one gentleman, he saw through the carriage, opened the door and came in the railway station. And he asked, please, Maharaj, give blessings. So Srila Prabhupada said, he had two sons with him, young son. So can you give one son to me? I can train him, make him a devotee.
Yeah, yeah.
No, thank you. I have to go now.
Thank you, but no thank you. Yeah, I know.
That's what people want, blessings, yeah. But they don't do any austerity.
Yeah, we have that here too. You know, people come to Krishna consciousness, and they're here for a while, and even the simple austerities that we have, they can't do it.
Exactly.
But the thing is if they start, then there'll be a chance later. Krishna never loses you. You make one step towards him, he's made 100 steps towards you. So you never lose. So even when Prabhu distributes one book, that person's spiritual life is guaranteed. They're going to see Krishna. And that's because of his agency. You know? This is wonderful. Wonderful. If you really think about that, if you just really meditate on that, of who Krishna is, who Vishnu is, and that you get to see that personality, you know, the creator of everything.
They want blessing but no sex.
Yeah. It's just amazing. Krishna consciousness is just amazing. Yes, Prabhu.
You estimated that it would take 60 years for us to see Krishna face to face. Now, this time has completed 50 years last year.
Yeah.
So when we produce our 60-year magazine, we'll have to put those people seeing Krishna.
Yes. Oh, there are many people already that are seeing Krishna within our movement, believe me. There are some incredible personalities that hide their personality, but there are some wonderful, wonderful people that you'd be blown out of the water if you really knew who they were, you know. But all of us have that chance to become Krishna conscious, you know. Yep.
So is seeing Krishna a realistic goal, or remembering Krishna to be a
slight more realistic?
Instead of seeing Krishna, remembering Krishna is a more realistic goal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada was saying here also, you know, that we have to be patient. He was saying this happened to Dhruva Maharaj, but, you know, what did he say exactly? I've got it here. It was really nice when I read that. Oh, no, I wanted to type that out too. There was another thing where Prabhupada actually said, you just have to be patient. You may not see straight away, like Dhruva Maharaj, but you will see. Just be patient. And keep on that fervent desire to see Krishna. And in the end, this is the guarantee from His Divine Grace. Any ladies, any questions? You're all okay with the purport? Is that all right? Yeah? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Yantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai. Govinda Premanandi. Jai.